There were three friends discussing life. One said, "Can men live together and know nothing of it? Work together and produce nothing? Can they fly around in space and forget to exist, world without end?" The three friends looked at each other and burst out laughing. They had no explanation, thus they were better friends than before. Then one friend died. Confucius sent a disciple to help the other two chant his obsequies. The disciple found that one friend had composed a song, while the other played the lute. They sang, "Hey, Sung Hu, where'd you go? Hey, Sung Hu, where'd you go? You have gone where you really were, and we are here. Damn it, we are here." Then the disciple of Confucius burst in on them and exclaimed, "May I inquire where you found this in the rubrics for obsequies? This frivolous caroling in the presence of the departed?" The two friends looked at each other and laughed. "Poor fellow, he doesn't know the new liturgy."
The first thing about life, that it has got no explanation. It is there in its absolute glory, but it has got no explanation. It is there as a mystery, and if you try to explain it, you will miss it. It will not be explained, but you will become blind to your explanations. Philosophy is the enemy of life. The most inimical thing that can happen to a man is to get fixed and obsessed with some explanations. The moment you think you have got the explanation, the life has left you, you are already dead. This will look paradoxical. Death may be explained. Life cannot be explained. Because death is something finished, complete. Life is always an ongoing affair. Life is always in the journey. Death has reached. When something has reached and is finished, you can explain it. You can define it. When something is still ongoing, that means the unknown is still to be traveled. You can know the past. You cannot know the future. You can put the past into a theory. How can you put the future into a theory? Future is always an opening, infinite opening. It goes on opening and opening. So when you explain, the explanation always indicates towards that which is dead. Philosophy has explanations, so it cannot be very alive. And you cannot find persons more dead than philosophers. The life has ebbed out. The life has oozed out. They are shrunken heads, like dead stones. They make much noise. But there is no music of life. They have many explanations, but they have completely forgotten that they have only explanations in their hands. explanation is like a closed fist. Life is like your open hand. They are totally different. And when the fist is completely closed, there is no sky in it, no air in it, no space to breathe. You cannot grab sky in your closed fist. The fist will miss it. The sky is there if the hand is open. It is available. Explanation is grabbing, closing, defining. Life oozes out of it. Even a laughter is greater than any philosophy. And when somebody laughs about life, he understands it. So all those who have really known, they have laughed. And their laughter can be heard even after centuries. When Mahakashyap laughed, looking at Buddha, Buddha was holding a flower in his hand and Mahakashyap laughed. His laughter can be heard even now. Those who have ears to hear, they will hear his laughter just like a river passing through centuries continuously. In Zen monasteries in Japan, they still ask, disciples ask the master, tell us, master, why Mahakashyap laughed. And those who are more alert, they ask, tell us, master, why Mahakashyap is still laughing. Not in the past, they use the present tense. Those who are more alert. And it is said the master will reply only when he can feel that you can hear the laughter of Mahakashyap. Because if you cannot hear it, nothing can be said about it to you. Buddhas have been always laughing. You may not have heard because your doors are closed. You may have looked at a Buddha and you may have felt that he is serious, but this seriousness is projected. It is your own seriousness. You have used Buddha as a screen. Hence Christians say Jesus never laughed. This seems to be absolutely foolish. Jesus must have laughed. And he must have laughed so totally that his whole being must have become a laughter. But the disciples couldn't hear it, that's true. They must have remained closed. Their own seriousness projected. They could see Jesus on the cross. Because you live in such a suffering, you can only see suffering. Even if they had heard Jesus laughing, they must have omitted it. It is so contradictory to their life. It doesn't fit. A Jesus laughing doesn't fit with you. He becomes a stranger. But in the East, it has been different. And in Zen, in Tao, the laughter reached its peak. It became the polar opposite of philosophy. A philosopher is serious because he thinks life is a riddle and the solution can be found. He works on life with his mind. He gets more and more serious. The more he misses life, the more he gets serious and dead. Taoist Lao Tse Chuan Tzu said that if you can laugh, if you can have a belly laughter that comes from the very core of your being, not just on the surface, not vintage, it comes from the deepest center of your being, it spreads all over you, overflows to the universe, that laughter will give you the first glimpse of what life is. It is a mystery. In Chuang Tzu, such a laughter is prayerful, because you accept life now. You don't hanker for the explanation. And how one can find the explanation? We are part of it. How the part can find the explanation for the whole? How the part can look at the whole? How the part can dissect, divide the whole? How the part can go before the whole was there? Because explanation means you must transcend that which you are trying to explain. You must go before it existed. You must go when it has ceased to exist. You must move around it so you can define it. And you must dissect so you can reach to the heart. A surgeon can find the explanation not for life, but for a dead body. So all medical definitions of life are foolish, because he dissects. And when he comes to know, the life is no more there. It is only a dead corpse. All explanations are post-mortem explanations. The life is not there. Now, even scientists have become aware of the phenomenon. That when you examine blood, you take blood out of the man, and then you examine. Now scientists say this breath cannot be the same, because when it was moving into the veins of the man, it was alive. It had a different quality. Now when it is in the test tube, it is dead. It is not the same blood. Because the basic quality, life, is no more in it. But all explanations are of that type. A flower on the tree is different, because life, the sap of life, is flowing in it. When you cut it from the tree, take it to the lab, examine it, it is a different flower. Don't be deceived by the appearance. Now no more life is flowing in it. You may come to know the chemical composition of the flower, but that is not the explanation. A poet has a different approach. Not through dissection, but through love. Not through uprooting the flower from the tree, but rather merging with the flowers, remaining with it in deep love, in a participation mystique. He participates, then he comes to know something. That too is not an explanation. Poetry cannot be an explanation, but it has a glimpse of the truth. It is truer than any science. Look, you are in love with someone. Your heart beats differently. Your lover, your beloved, will listen to your heart. It beats differently. Your lover will take your hand. The warmth is different. The blood moves in a different dance. It pulsates differently. The doctor takes your hand into his hand. pulsation is not the same. He can hear the heart beating, but this beat is different. When the heart was beating for a lover, it had a song of its own. But only a lover can know the beat. Only the lover can know the pulsation, the blood, the warmth of life. Doctor cannot know what has changed. Doctor has become the observer and you are the observed. You are not one. Doctor treats you like an object. He looks at you as if he is looking at a thing that makes the difference. A lover doesn't look at you as an object. He becomes one with you. He merges and melts. He comes to know the deeper core of your being, but he has got no explanation. He feels it. But feeling is different. He cannot think about it. And anything that can be thought will not be alive. Thought deals with death. It always deals with dead objects. That's why in science there is no place for feeling. Because feeling gives a different dimensions to existence. The dimension of the alive. This beautiful story has to say many things to you. Move step by step into it. And if you reach to a conclusion, then understand that you have missed. If you reach to a laughter, then you have understood. There were three friends discussing life. Chuang Tzu is very telegraphic, as it is always. Those who know, they will not utter a single word unnecessarily. They live with the essential. There were three friends discussing life. The first thing to be understood is, only friends can discuss life. Whenever a discussion becomes antagonistic, whenever a discussion becomes a debate, the dialogue is broken. Life cannot be discussed that way. Only friends can discuss. Because then discussion is not a debate, it is a dialogue. And what is the difference between a debate and a dialogue? In debate, you are not ready to listen to the others. Even if you are listening, your listening is false. You are not listening. You are simply preparing the argument. When the other is speaking, you are getting ready to contradict. When the other is talking, you are simply waiting to get the opportunity to argue. You have a prejudice already there in you. You have a theory. You are not in search. You are not ignorant. You are not innocent. You are already filled. Your boat is not empty. You carry certain theories with you and you are trying to prove them true. A seeker of truth carries no theories with him. He is always open, vulnerable. He can listen. A Hindu cannot listen. A Mohammedan cannot listen. How a Hindu can listen? He already knows the truth. There is no need to listen. He will try you to make him listen. He cannot listen. His mind is already so filled, nothing can paint it. A Christian cannot listen. He already knows the truth. He has closed his doors for new breezes to reach, for the new sun to rise. He has closed his eyes. He has reached. He has arrived. All those who feel that they have arrived, they can debate, but they cannot move in a dialogue. Then they can clash. Conflict arises. They oppose each other. In such a discussion, you may prove something, but nothing is proved. You may silence the other, but the other is never converted. You cannot convince, because this is a sort of war. A civilized war. You are not fighting with weapons, you are fighting with words. Chantasu says, three friends discussing life. That's why they could reach to laughter. Otherwise, there would have been a conclusion. A theory might have defeated other theories. A philosophy might have silenced other philosophies. Then there would have been a conclusion, and conclusion is dead. Life has no conclusion. Life has no full stop to it. It always goes on and on and on, endlessly. It is always eternally an ongoing affair. How can you conclude anything about it? The moment you conclude, you have stepped out of it. Life goes on and you have stepped out of the way. You may cling to your conclusion, but life will not wait for you. Friends can discuss. Why? Because when you love a person, you can't love a philosophy. Philosophers cannot be friends. Either you can be their disciples or their enemies, but you cannot be their friends. Either you are convinced with them or not convinced. Either you follow them or don't follow them. But you cannot be friends. Friendship is possible only between two empty boats. Then you are open to the other, inviting to the other. Then you are constantly an invitation. Come to me. Enter me, be with me. You can throw theories, philosophies, but you cannot throw friendship. And when you are in friendship, a dialogue becomes possible. In dialogue, you listen. And if you have to speak, you speak not to contradict the others. You speak just to seek, to inquire. You speak not with a conclusion already reached. You speak with an inquiry, ongoing inquiry. You are not trying to prove something. You speak from innocence, not from philosophy. Philosophy is never innocent. It is always cunning. It is a device of the mind. Three friends were discussing life because between friends a dialogue is possible. So in the East it has been the tradition that unless you find friendship, love, reverence, trust, no inquiry is possible. If you go to a master and your boat is filled with your ideas, there can be no contact, There can be no dialogue. First, you have to be empty, so friendship becomes possible. You can look without any ideas floating in the eyes. You can look without conclusions. And whenever you can look without the conclusion, the perspective is vast. It is not confined. A Hindu can read the Bible, but he never understands it. Really, he never reads it. He cannot listen to it. A Christian can read the Gita, but he remains the outsider. He never penetrates to its innermost being. He never reaches to the inner realm. He moves around and around. He cannot beat the bush. Impossible. Because of the conclusions in the mind. He already knows that only Christ is true. He already knows that only through Christ is salvation. He already knows only Christ is the Son of God. How can he listen to Krishna? Only Christ is truth. Then Krishna is bound to be untrue. At the most, a beautiful untruth, but can never be true. Or if he concedes too much, then he will say, approximately true. But what do you mean when you say approximately true? It is untrue. Because truth is either there or not. Nothing can be approximately true. Truth is or truth is not. It is always total. You cannot divide it. You cannot say it is true to some degrees. No. Truth knows no degrees. Either it is or it is not. So when the mind has a conclusion that Christ is the only truth, then impossible to listen to Krishna. Even he comes across on the path, you will not be able to listen to him. Even if you can meet Buddha, you will not meet him. And the whole world is filled with conclusions. Someone is a Christian, someone is a Hindu, someone is a Jain, someone is a Buddhist. That's why truth is missing. A religious person cannot be Christian, Hindu or Buddhist. Because a religious person can only be a sincere inquirer. He inquires. And he remains open without any conclusions. His boat is empty. Three friends discussing life. Only friends can discuss, because then it becomes a dialogue. Then the relationship is of I and thou. When you are debating, the relationship is as if I and it. The other is a thing to be converted, convinced. The other is not a doubt. The other has no significance. The other is just a number. In friendship, the other is significant. The other has an intrinsic value. The other is an end in itself. You are not trying to convert. How can you convert a person? What foolishness! The very effort is foolish to convert a person. A person is not a thing. A person is so big and so vast that no theory can be more important than a person. No Bible is more important than a person. No Gita is more important than a person. A person means the very glory of life. You can love a person, you can never convert a person. If you try to convert, you are trying to manipulate. When the person has become a means, then you are exploiting. Dialogue is possible when your I says thou, when the other is loved, when there is no ideology behind. The other is simply loved, whether he is a Christian or Hindu doesn't matter. This is what friendship means. And friends can discuss life because dialogue is possible. One said, can men live together and know nothing of it? Work together and produce nothing? Can they fly around in space and forget to exist? World without end? He is not proposing a theory, he is simply raising a question. And remember, you can raise a question in two ways. Sometimes you raise a question only because you have to supply an answer and the answer is already there. You raise a question just to answer it. Then the question is not real, it is false. Because the answer is already there, the question is just a trick, a rhetoric. It is not real, authentic. The question is authentic when there is no answer in you. You question, but you don't question from an answer. You question simply to look. The question leaves you empty. Just open, inviting, and inquire. One said, can men live together and know nothing of it? We live together, and we never know anything what togetherness is. We live together. For years you can live together and without knowing what togetherness is. Look, all over the world, people are living together. Nobody is living alone. Husbands with wives, wives with husbands, children with parents, parents with children, teachers with students, friends with friends. Everybody is living together. Life exists in togetherness. But do you know what togetherness is? Living with your wife for 40 years, you may not have lived with her even for a single moment. Even while making love to her, you may have been thinking of other things. Then you were not there. Then the love making was just mechanical. I have heard, once it happened, Mullah Nasruddin went to a film with his wife. They were already married for at least 20 years. The film was one of those torrid foreign films. When they were leaving the cinema hall, the wife said to Nasruddin, Nasruddin, you never loved me as those actors were doing there in the film. Why? Nasruddin said, are you crazy? Do you know how much they are paid for doing such things? Thank you. people living with each other without any love. Because we love only when it pays. And how can you love if you love only when it pays? Then love has also become a commodity in the market. Then it is not a relationship. It is not a togetherness. It is not a celebration. You are not happy being with the other. At the most, you just tolerate the other. Mullah Nasruddin's wife was on her deathbed, and the doctor said, "Nasruddin, I must be friend to you, because in such moments, it is better to be true. Your wife cannot be saved. The disease has gone beyond us, and you must get ready. You should not allow yourself to suffer. Accept it. It is a fate. The wife is going to die." Nasruddin said, "You don't be worried about it. If I could suffer with her for so many years, I can suffer for a few hours more." At the most, we tolerate. And whenever you think in terms of toleration, you are suffering. Our togetherness is suffering. That's why Jean-Paul Sartre says, "The other is the hell." Because with the other you simply suffer. The other becomes the bondage. The other becomes the domination. The other starts creating trouble. Your freedom is lost. Your happiness is lost. Then it becomes a routine. Tolerance. If you are tolerating the other, how can you know the beauty of togetherness? Really, it has never happened. Marriage almost always never happens, because marriage means the celebration of togetherness. It is not a license. No registry office can give you marriage. No priest can give you it as a gift. It is a tremendous revolution in the being. It is a great transformation in your very style of life. Because it can happen only when you celebrate togetherness, when the other is no more felt as the other. When you no more feel yourself as I, when the two are not really two, but a bridge has happened, when they have become one in a certain sense, bodily they remain two. But as far as their innermost being is concerned, they have become one. There may be two poles of one existence, but they are not two. A bridge exists. That bridge gives you the glimpses of togetherness. It is one of the rarest things to come across a marriage. People live together because they cannot live alone. Remember this. Because they cannot live alone, that's why they live together. To live alone is uncomfortable. To live alone is uneconomical. To live alone is difficult. That's why they live together. The reasons are negative. One man was going to get married, and somebody asked that you have always been against marriage, why suddenly you have changed? He said, the winter is coming, and they say that this winter is going to be very cold, and central heating is beyond me, and wife is cheaper. But this is the logic. You live with someone because it is comfortable, convenient, economical, cheaper. To live alone is really difficult. A wife is so many things. The housekeeper, the cook, the servant, the nurse, so many things. Cheapest labor in the world. And doing so many things without being paid at all. It is an exploitation. Marriage exists as an institution of exploitation. It is not togetherness. That's why no happiness comes out of it as a flowering. It cannot come out of the roots of exploitation. How ecstasy can be born? And then there are your so-called saints who go on saying that you are miserable because you live in family, because you live in the world. Leave everything, renounce. And to you also their logic appears to be right, not because it is right. It looks right because you have missed togetherness. Otherwise, all those saints will look absolutely wrong. Because one who has known togetherness, he has known the divine. One who is really married has known the divine. Because love is the greatest door. But togetherness is not there. And you live together without knowing what togetherness is. And you live for 70 years, 80 years, without knowing what life is. You drift. Without any roots in life. You just move from one moment to another. Without tasting what life gives you. And this is not given by birth. It is not hereditary to know life. Life comes through birth. But the wisdom, the experience, the ecstasy has to be large. Hence the meaning of meditation. You have to earn it. You have to grow towards it. You have to attain a certain maturity. Only then you will be able to know it. Life can open to you only in a certain moment of maturity. But people live and die childish. They never really grow. They never attain to maturity. What is maturity? Just becoming sexually mature? You are not mature. Ask the psychologists. They say that the mental age remains near about 13 to 14. Your physical body goes on growing, but your mind stops near about 13. That's why there is no wonder why you behave so foolishly, why your life becomes a continuous foolishness. A mind who has not grown is bound to commit every moment something which is wrong. And the impure mind always throws the responsibility on the other. You are unhappy because everybody else is creating hell for you. The other is the hell. I say this Kshatriyan assertion is very immature. If you are mature, the other can become heaven also. The other is whatsoever you are, because the other is just a mirror. It reflects you. When I say maturity, I mean an inner integrity. And this inner integrity comes only when you stop throwing responsibilities on others. When you stop saying that the other is creating your suffering. When you start realizing that you are the creator of your suffering. This is the first step towards maturity. That I am responsible. Whatsoever is happening, it is my doing. One feels sad. My doing. One feels very much disturbed. But if you can remain with this feeling, sooner or later, you will become able to stop many things. This is what the theory of karma is all about. You are responsible. Don't say the society is responsible. Don't say the parents are responsible. Don't say the economic conditions are responsible. Don't throw the responsibility to anybody. You are responsible. Once you take this burden, in the beginning it looks like a burden, because now you cannot throw responsibility on anybody else. It happened, Mullah Nasruddin was sitting very sad. Somebody asked, why Nasruddin so sad? So he said, my wife was insisting not to gamble, not to smoke, not to drink, not to play cards. I have stopped all. So the man said, then your wife must be very happy. Nasruddin said, that is the problem. Now she cannot find anything to complain about. So she is very unhappy. She starts talking, but she cannot find anything to talk about. Now she cannot make me responsible for anything. And she is so unhappy. I have never seen her so unhappy. And I was also thinking that when I stop all these things, her unhappiness will stop. But she has become more unhappy than ever. If you go on throwing responsibility on others, and they all follow whatsoever you say they do, you will commit suicide. Because nowhere to throw your responsibilities. So it is good to have few faults. It helps others to be happy. A really perfect husband, and the wife will leave him. Because how to dominate a perfect man? So even if you don't like, go on doing something wrong so the wife can dominate you and feel happy. A perfect husband, and there is bound to be divorce. Any perfect man, and you will all be against him, because you cannot condemn him. You cannot say anything wrong about him. Our mind loves to throw responsibility on somebody else, wants to complain. Then we feel good, because we are not responsible, we are unburdened. But this unburdening is very costly. You are not really unburdened. You are getting more and more burdened. Only you are not alert. People live for 70 years, and if you really know, for many, many lives they have lived without knowing what life is. They were not mature. They were not integrated. They were not centered. They lived on the periphery. Your periphery meets the other, and clash happens. And you go on being concerned that the other is doing wrong, you remain on the periphery. Once you realize that I am responsible for my being, whatsoever has happened, I am the cause. I have done it. Suddenly, your consciousness shifts from the periphery to the center. Now you become for the first time the center of your world. Now much can be done. Because whatsoever you don't like, you can drop. Whatsoever you like, you can adopt. Whatsoever you feel is true, you can follow. And whatsoever you feel is untrue, there is no need to follow because you are now centered and rooted in yourself. The friend asked, can men live together and know nothing of it? Work together and produce nothing? Can they fly around in space and forget to exist? World without end? The three friends looked at each other. Only friends look at each other. When there is someone you feel antagonistic, you never look at him. You avoid. Even if you have to look, your look is vacant. You don't allow your eyes to absorb him. He is something foreign, rejected. Eyes are the doors. You look towards the person only when you want to absorb and let him melt in you. The three friends looked at each other. One friend created the inquiry. The other two were not in any hurry to answer. They waited. They were patient. If there was any conclusion in their mind, they must have asserted immediately. But they looked at each other. They felt the situation, the inquiry, the heart of the inquiry, the meaning of the question, the depth of the question. And remember, if you can feel the depth of the question, the answer is almost solved. But nobody is so patient. Nobody is ready to go with the question deeply. You ask, but you never go into the inquiry. You ask for the answer immediately. The friends looked at each other and burst out laughing. They felt the question, the penetration of it, the depth, the reality of it, the fact of it. No answer was needed, and any answer would have been foolish. Any answer would have been superficial. It is said about Buddha that millions of times people will ask and he will not answer. If the question was such that any answer will be superficial, he will not answer. If somebody asked, is there a God, he will remain silent. But people are foolish. They started thinking that either he is an atheist, he doesn't believe in God. Otherwise, why he should not say yes? He is ignorant. He doesn't know. Otherwise, why he should not say yes or no? If you don't know, when you ask a question like this, whether there is God, does God exist, you don't know what you are asking. Is this a question to be answered? Then you are stupid. Can such vital questions be answered? Then you don't know the depth of it. Then this is curiosity, not inquiry. If the man who was asking to Buddha was really an inquirer, an authentic seeker, then he would have remained with Buddha's silence, because the silence was the answer. In that silence he would have felt the question. In that silence the question would have asserted. In the background of the silence it would have become more clear. A clarity would have come to him. Whenever you ask a deep question, no answer is required. All that is required is to remain with the question. Don't move here and there. Remain with the question and wait. The very question will become the answer. Because the question, if really went into it, if you go deep into it, will lead you to the very source from where the answer also flowers. It is in you. Buddha has not answered any real question. And remember that about me also. I'll go on answering your questions. I also cannot answer your real questions, but you have not asked yet. Whenever you will ask the real question, I am not going to answer. Because no real question can be answered. It is not the intellectual thing. Only heart to heart the transmission happens, not from head to head. The three friends looked at each other. What happened in that look? They were not heads in that look, they became the hearts. They looked at each other, they felt, they tasted the question. It was so real. And there is no answer to it. Yes, we live without knowing what life is. Yes, we live together without knowing what togetherness is. Yes, we live and forgetting completely that we exist. We have been flying round and round into the sky without knowing where we are going or what. The question is so real. If any answer is given, that answer will be foolish. Only a fool will answer such a question. They looked at each other, really they looked into each other and burst out laughing. Why burst out laughing? The whole situation is so absurd. Really, we live without knowing what life is. We exist without becoming aware of existence. We journey and journey without knowing from where or to what or why. Life is a mystery. Whenever you confront a mystery, laughter will arise. How can you answer a mystery? What is most mysterious in you? Laughter is the most mysterious in you. No animal can laugh. Only man. It is the supreme most glory of man. No animal laughs, no trees laugh. Only man laughs. Laughter is the most mysterious element in man. Aristotle defined man as the rational being. It is not good, because reason exists in other animals also. The difference is only of degrees. It is not much. Man can be defined only as the laughing and the weeping animal. No other definition will suit. Because no other animal can weep, no other animal can laugh. This polarity exists only in humanity. This is something mysterious, most mysterious in man. Anger exists all over, it is nothing. Sex exists all over, it is nothing. It is not so mysterious. If you want to understand sex, you can understand animal sex. And all that is applicable to the animal sex will be applicable to man. Man is nothing more in that way. Anger, violence, aggression, possessiveness, jealousy, everything exists. And more simple and pure in animals than in you. Everything is confused in you. That's why a psychologist has to study rats just to study men. Because they are simple, clear, less confused. And whatsoever they conclude about rats is true about you. All the laboratories of psychology are filled with rats. The rat has become the most important animal for psychologists. Because it is so human-like. It is in many ways human-like. Only rat is the animal which follows humanity wherever you go. It is universal. In Siberia, if a man is found, somewhere a rat will be there. Wherever you go. I suspect the rat must have reached to the moon. Because it follows men. No other animal can exist everywhere like rat. And its behavior is absolutely human. You understand the behavior of the rat and you have understood humanity. But the rat cannot laugh. The rat cannot weep. Laughter and weeping are two aspects of something which exists only in man. If you have to understand laughter and weeping, you have to study humanity. Nowhere else it can be studied. That's why I call it the most distinctive quality of human mind. And whenever you feel a mystery, only two ways are left. Either you weep or you laugh. It depends on the personality type. It was possible with a different personality type that all the three would have wept. Because when such a mystery surrounds, when you encounter such an unknowable mystery, that no explanation is possible, what you can do, how you respond. But laughter is better than weeping, because weeping comes when death, the mystery of death surrounds you. Then you weep. And the question was about life, so it was relevant to laugh. You think the relevance, whenever death is there and you encounter the mystery of death, you weep. The question was about life, not about death. So it seems relevant. They all looked into each other, the life that was in each other. The life pulsating, life dancing all around. And with no explanation. with no secret book to reveal the keys. Life in its total mystery, in its total unknowability. What to do? They were not philosophers. They were true men, mystics. They laughed. They had no explanation. Thus they were better friends than before. This is beautiful. Because whenever there is an explanation, enmity arises. Whenever you believe in something, you are divided. Belief creates conflict. The whole world is divided because of belief. You are a Hindu and somebody is a Mohammedan, you are enemies. Why you are enemies? Because of the belief. Belief creates the conflict. Foolish explanations, ideologies, create conflict, war. Look at this. If there is no explanation, who is a Hindu and who is a Mohammedan? And how can you fight? For what? Man has always been fighting for philosophies, shedding blood, murdering each other, just for foolish beliefs. And if you look into beliefs, you can see the foolishness, not your beliefs, others' beliefs. Your belief is something sacred, but everybody else's belief looks foolish. All beliefs are foolish. You cannot see your own because it is so near. Really, explanations are foolish, stupid. I have heard one group of birds was flying towards the south for the winter. One bird at the rear asked another, "How come we always follow this idiot leader?" The other said, "In the first place, all leaders are idiots. Otherwise, who would like to lead? Only fools are always ready to lead. A wise man hesitates. Life is so mysterious. It is not a ready-made path. How can you lead? A wise man hesitates. An idiot is always ready to lead." So the bird said, "In the first place, all leaders are idiots, because except idiots, nobody is interested in leading. And in the second place, he has got the map. So every year we have to follow him." Life has got no map. And there is no possibility to make any map. It is a pathless path. Without explanations, how you can be divided? If there is no explanation, the world will be one. But there are millions of explanations, so millions of fragments. Chuang Tzu says really a very penetrating thing. They had no explanation. Thus, they were better friends than before. No, there was nothing to be enemies, nothing to fight about. They laughed, and the laughter made them one. They laughed, and the laughter led them into a togetherness. Explain and you are divided. Get philosophical, you are separate from others. Become a Hindu, a Mohammedan, a Buddhist, then all others are enemies. Look at the mystery and laugh, and humanity is one. And then there is no need to say that Christians are brothers to Hindus and Hindus are brothers to Mohammedans. First divide them by beliefs, and then create, first make them ill and then supply them this medicine that you are all brothers. And have you seen brothers? They fight more than enemies. So what is the use of making them brothers? Man fights for his explanations. All fights are foolish. Man fights for his flesh. Look at the flesh. What type of foolishness, what type of madness exists in the world? For flesh. For symbols, for beliefs, for ideologies. Says Chuang Tzu, they had no explanation, they laughed. In that mysterious moment, they became one, better friends than before. If you really want to be a friend, have no explanations and no conclusions. Don't believe in anything. Then you are not divided. Then the humanity is one. Then there is no barrier. And love exists not through mind. It exists through feeling. They laughed. Laughter comes from the heart. The laughter comes from the belly. The laughter comes from the total being. When three persons laugh, they become friends. When three persons weep, they become friends. When three persons debate, they become enemies. Then one friend died. Confucius sent a disciple to help the other two chant his obsequies. Confucius is the most perfect man of manners, par excellence. Nobody can transcend him. So he is always the butt of Chuang Tzu and Lao Tzu. In their stories, they bring Confucius just to laugh at his foolishness. What is his foolishness? Because he lives by a system. He lives by a formula. He lives by theories and beliefs. He is the perfectly civilized man, the most perfect gentleman the world has ever known. He moves according to the rule. He looks according to the rule. He laughs according to the rule. He never moves beyond the boundary. He lives in a constant bondage of its own making. So he is the butt of laughter. And Chuang Tzu and Lao Tzu enjoy very much bringing him in. Then one friend died. Confucius sent a disciple to help the other two chant his obsequies. Neither life nor death is a mystery to him. It is something according to a system. Some mannerism has to be followed. So he sent his two disciples to look whether the dead man is disposed according to the rules, the right prayer, the right chanting, which is given in the book. The dead should be respected. This is the difference. A man who lives through manners is always thinking of respect, never of love. And what respect is in comparison to love? Love is something alive. Respect is absolutely dead. The disciple found that one friend had composed a song of his own, while the other played the lute. This was unbelievable. This is disrespectful to a person who is dead. And the dead body was lying there, and one friend has composed a song. They loved the other man. And when you love a man, you would like to give him the last farewell. Throw your love, not through the hoops, not through a ready-made song, borrowed, and so many have chanted it, so many have used it. It is already rotten and rubbish. They have made a song of their own, fresh, young. Of course, it was homemade, not produced in a factory, not mass-produced, just homemade. Not so polished, of course, because they were not poets. They were friends. They didn't know how the poetry is created. The meter may have been wrong. The grammar not correct. But love doesn't care about grammar, doesn't care about meter, doesn't care about rhythm, because love has it such a vital rhythm of its own. It need not care. When there is no love, then everything has to be taken care about. Because then you have to substitute. One was playing the lute, and I know well he was not a lute player either. But how to say goodbye to a friend? It must come from your heart. It must be spontaneous. It cannot be ready-made. That's the point. They sang, "Hey Sunghu, where do you go?" The mystery. They are not saying that you are going to heaven. They don't know. Otherwise, everybody who dies, you say he has gone to heaven. Then who is going to hell? Nobody seems to go to hell. In India, for a dead person, they use the word swargi. It means one who has gone to the heaven. Then who is going to hell? They didn't know. So what is the point of saying a falsehood? Who knows where this man has gone? This Sunghu. To hell, heaven, or whether hell and heaven exist, nobody knows. It is a mystery, and one should not defile a mystery. One should not make it profane. One should not assert falsehoods. It is such a sacred thing. One should not say anything which is not known directly. Hey Sunghu, where do you go? It was a question mark. Hey Sunghu, where do you go? You have gone. Where you really were? And we are here. Damn it, we are here. They say that you have gone to the place from where you had come. This is a secret love, that the ultimate can only be the beginning. The circle comes and becomes perfect, complete. From where it starts, it reaches to the same point. The end cannot be anything else but the beginning. The death cannot be anything else but the birth. The final should be the source, the original. One is born out of nothingness, and then one dies and moves into nothingness. The boat was empty when you were born. When you will die, the boat will be empty again. Just a flash of lightning, a few moments, you are in the body, and then you disappear. And nobody knows from where you had come, from whence, and where you go. Nobody knows. And they don't claim any knowledge. They say, this much we feel, Sungho, you have gone to the place from where you had come, and damn it, we are still here. So they are not sorry for us. They are sorry for themselves, that we are hanging in the middle. Your circle is perfect. But whenever somebody dies, have you felt this? That you are sorry for the person who is dead, are sorry for yourself. Really, when someone dies, you are sad for him or her, or for yourself. Everybody is sorry for himself, because every death brings the news that you are going to die. But a person who can laugh at the mystery of life knows what it is, because only knowledge, real wisdom can laugh. Where you really were, you have gone, and we are here, damn it. We are here, and we are still in the middle. Our journey is incomplete. Your circle has become perfect. So they are sorry for themselves, and if they weep, they are weeping for themselves. For the friend who is departed, they have nothing but a song. Nothing but a celebration of the heart. If they are sorry, they are sorry for themselves. This is something to be understood very deeply. If you understand life, if you can laugh at it, then death is the completion. Then it is not the end. Remember, death is not the end of life, it is the completion. It is the climax, the crescendo, the peak from where the wave returns to the original source again. They are sorry for themselves that their wave is hanging in the middle. They have not reached the crescendo, the peak. And their friend has reached where he was before. He has reached the home. Those who understand life, only they can understand death. Because life and death are not two. Death is the peak, the ultimate, the final flowering, the fragrance of life. Death looks ugly to you because you have never known life. And death creates fear in you because you are afraid of life. Remember, whatsoever your attitude towards life, the same will be the attitude towards death. If you are scared of death, you are scared of life. If you love life, you will love death. Because death is nothing but the highest peak, the completion. The sun reaches to its end. The river falls into the ocean. The river came from the ocean in the first place. Now the circle is complete. The river has reached to the home. Then the disciple of Confucius burst in on them and exclaimed, "May I inquire where you found this? In the rubrics for obsequies, this frivolous caroling, in the presence of the departed?" The disciple of Confucius cannot understand them. They will look frivolous. They will look disrespectful. What type of song? From where you have got this? It is not authorized. It is not from the Vedas. Then the disciple of Confucius burst in on them and exclaim, "May I inquire where you found this?" Everything should be according to the books, according to the Bible, to the Vedas. But life cannot be according to the books. Life always transcends books. It always goes beyond. Life always throws books aside and moves ahead. Where have you found this frivolous caroling in the presence of the departed? You should be respectful. Someone has departed, someone is dead, and what you are doing, this is profane. The two friends look at each other again and laugh. Poor fellow. He does not know the new liturgy. He does not know the new scripture. He does not know the new religion. That is what is happening here every day. The new liturgy. A man was here just few days before. Professor of history. And he asked me, "To what tradition you belong?" I said, "To no tradition." He had come here from America to make a film of the meditation techniques of the camp, of what I say, of what is happening here. The moment he heard that I don't belong to any tradition, he simply disappeared. Then I don't belong to history. It is so obvious. Poor fellow. He does not know the new literature.